I'm going to get Dawn to come up and bring the reading to us. We're going to, it's quite a long reading, so we're going to read it in tandem. So Mark chapter 15.
And as soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and the scribes and the whole council. And they bound Jesus, and they led him away and delivered him over to Pilate. And Pilate asked him,
"Are you the king of the Jews?"
And he answered him,
"You have said so."
And the chief priests accused him of many things, and Pilate again asked him,
"Have you no answer to make? See how many charges they bring against you."
But Jesus made no further answer, so that Pilate was amazed. Now at the feast he used to release for them one prisoner for whom they asked. And among the rebels in the prison, who had committed murder in the insurrection, there was a man named Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he answered them, saying,
"Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?"
For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priests had delivered him up. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release for them Barabbas instead. And Pilate again said to them,
"Then what shall I do with a man you call the king of the Jews?"
And they cried out,
"Crucify
again.
Him.
And Pilate said to them,
"Why? What evil has he done?"
And they shouted all the more,
"Crucify him."
So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released for them Barabbas. And having him scourged, he delivered him to be crucified. And the soldiers led him away inside the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters. And they called together the whole cotillion. And they clothed him in a purple cloak, and they twisted together a crown of thorns, and they put it on him. And they began to salute him,
"Hail, King of the Jews!"
And they were striking his head with a reed, and spitting on him, and kneeling down in homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the purple cloak, and put on his own clothes, and they led him out to crucify him. And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming into the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross. And they brought him to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him. And they divided his garments among them, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. And it was the third hour when they crucified him. And the inscription on the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two robbers, one on his right and one on the left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying,
"Aha, you who destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself, come down from the cross."
So also the chief priests with the scribes mocked him to one another, saying,
"Oh, he saved others, he can't save himself. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, come down now from the cross, so that we may see and believe."
Those who were crucified with him also reviled him. And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And in the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice,
"Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani,"
which means,
my God, why have you forsaken me?"
And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said,
"Behold, he's calling Elijah."
And someone ran and filled a sponge with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying,
"Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to take him down."
And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last breath. And the curtain in the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom. And when the centurion who was stood facing him saw that in the way he breathed his last, he said,
"Truly, this man was the Son of God."
There were also women looking on from a distance, and among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the younger, and of Josie and Salome. When he was in Galilee, they followed him and ministered to him. And there was also many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. And when evening came, had come, since it was the day of preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, who was also himself looking for the kingdom of God, took courage and went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate was surprised to hear that he was already dead, and summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he was already dead. And when he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the corpse to Joseph. And Joseph bought a linen shroud, and taking him down, wrapped him in the linen shroud, and laid him in a tomb that had been cut out of the rock. And he rolled a stone against the entrance of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where he had been laid.
Remember, Mark is Peter's companion. He's like a son to Peter. Peter recounted to Mark all the details of Jesus' life, and Mark set it out in his gospel. It's the shortest gospel. It's the most concise. You tend to give it to new Christians. It's an easy read to get through. And we managed to read through Good Friday's events in just one chapter. So 47 verses, but it's one chapter. And Mark has been brief. There's a lot of details that we know of Good Friday that just missed out completely from Mark's gospel because he didn't have time, he didn't have space. So the whole trip to Herod and back again and all that sort of stuff, that's not here in Mark's gospel. Jesus' conversation with Pilate, if read Mark's gospel, you'd never know it happened. And all about his wife coming and speaking to him, all that sort of stuff, it's not in Mark's gospel. Jesus' conversations with the thieves on the cross and the conversion of one of them. You wouldn't know about it if you only had Mark's gospel. And the earthquakes that shook the ground. It's not in Mark's gospel. The dead bodies that came out of the tomb and walked around Jerusalem. That's not in Mark's gospel either. We didn't read about any of those events. But Mark chose to put some important details. I don't know whether you spotted in the middle of our reading. What he did is he put in some really important details for us. He told us the personal details of Simon of Cyrene. Told his sons' names, Rufus and Alexander. And he told us about Simon of Cyrene carrying Jesus' cross up Calvary's mountain. Mark thought those details were significant enough to make sure they're included in his account. And all of those other big things are not. So why is that? Now Simon, if you want to listen to my very poor Hebrew, it's a very common name in Jewish circles. It's a very common name. And so what Mark has done is to make sure there's no confusion, that we know exactly which Simon we're talking about. This is Simon of Cyrene that he's talking about. He wants to be clear about that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a bit of license because Mark's put that there. So Simon of Cyrene has put it in there. And that would have been very relevant to people in first century Christianity. So because Simon of Cyrene was still alive. His sons were still alive. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a little bit of license and I'm going to put myself in the shoes of a first century Christian explaining Mark's gospel for the first time to a novice, to a new Christian out in the provinces. I hope you're going to forgive me for that. But when I say I've used a bit of license, it's going to be a little bit dramatized, but I've tried to take all the information that I can out of the whole of the New Testament to feed into this. So it's dramatized, but it's not made up. And that's Mark's point. These are real events. These are real people. You can go and speak to them yourselves and find out exactly what happened. So here goes. No. Not Simon Peter. Not Simon Petros, Simon the Rock, on which the church is being built. No. Not that Simon. Simon of Cyrene. No. Not Simon the Zealot. Not Simon the freedom fighter. Simon of Cyrene. Everyone knows him. No. Not Simon the tanner from Joppa. Yeah, everyone knows him. We all go to him to get our leather work done and stuff. No, not that Simon. Simon of Cyrene. Ah. Oh. There are loads of Cyrenians in Jerusalem. They've even got their own synagogue in Jerusalem. There's loads of them. Don't you remember? Luke told us, didn't he, in his book of Acts. He told us there was the Cyrenian synagogue that plotted to have Stephen martyred. Do you remember that? They got him stoned to death. That was a Cyrenian. Simon wasn't one of them. He was a real Cyrenian. He was real. He was from Cyrene. No one in their right mind living in Israel in first century Judea under Roman occupation, with all these revolts going on, you know, like Barabbas and his crowd stirring everybody up. No self-respecting Jew is going to name their kid Rufus, which is a Roman name. They're not going to give him that if he was living in Jerusalem, is he? He's from Cyrene, the trading port. Alexander the Great, he founded it when he put his empire down. Now it's doing really well under the Romans. Simon was a Cyrenian through and through. He loved the culture. That's why he names his sons after them. Rufus, after the Romans. Alexander, after Alexander the Great. That's why they get their names. Okay, Kyrene. We call it Cyrene. I can't cope with these foreign sounding names. Kyrene, Alex said that. We all call it Cyrene. Get used to it. Cyrene, that port. Simon of Cyrene, yes, him. You know his son Rufus. Remember when Peter and Mark went off and planted that church in Rome? Well, Rufus settled there with his mum. They're really big in the church there, you know. Paul stays with them sometimes when he's in Rome. Remember, he thanks them, doesn't he, at the end of his letter to the Romans. You know what I'm talking about. Everyone knows Simon of Cyrene. Matthew knows him, he wrote about him. Luke knows him, he wrote about him. Yes, Simon of Cyrene, that's the one, he's the one, yeah. Tell you what, Jesus said, if you want to be my disciple, you must take up your cross and follow him. Simon of Cyrene really did that. He literally took up a cross and, as John told us, he followed Jesus all the way up Calvary's mountain. He literally took up his cross and followed him. Go ask him about it. Changed his life. Go and speak to him. No. Simon wasn't one of Jesus' followers. No, he got nothing to do with him. Well, not until that day. He didn't even know him. He didn't live in the same place. It's just a case of wrong place, wrong time for him. Simon wasn't even a good Jew. Fancy giving your kids Roman and Greek names. It's typical of these Hellenizers around the world. It's just like Andrew and Philip, you know. What on earth were their parents doing? You know what it was? They were living in Galilee of the Gentiles. Fancy giving your kids Greek names, Gentile names. Far too much mingling and cross-cultural stuff for good Jews to stomach. Nah. But in fairness, Simon was travelling to Jerusalem for the Passover. You've got to give him credit for that. And, you know, he's bringing his wife and his young ones over as well. They come all the way over from Cyrene. It's a big event, Passover. They take the ship to Joppa, I think, and then they travelled across country to Jerusalem. That's what Mark says, didn't they? They travelled across country to Jerusalem, and they've been dropped off outside the walls. They come on the car, but they couldn't get into Jerusalem because it's packed out for Passover. You can't move in Passover, so they'd unload him outside. And, his wife's there busy looking after the little one, so he's got all the luggage on his shoulders. And he wanders through the Gennith Gate, and that's how the soldiers spotted him. In that huge crowd, that's how they were looking for someone to carry Jesus, carry the cross up Calvary's mountain. They were looking for someone who was young, fit and strong, could carry burdens. There he is. That's the man. You, over here. Leave all that stuff there with your wife and kids. We've got a job for you. You're going to carry this cross up this mountain right now. Now, you know it. Criminals, they carry their own crosses to crucifixions. Now, you see a guy carrying a cross to a crucifixion site, you know he's the guilty one. I tell you what, it wasn't Simon's cross, but that baying mob didn't know that. I tell you, it wasn't easy following Jesus that day. All that spitting, all that shouting, all that dust and the stones and sticks and whatever that were flung at them on that road. I tell you what, Simon had a tough time following Jesus that day. He really did carry his cross. Yeah, but Jesus couldn't carry his own cross. You know Jesus is a carpenter, right? Yeah? He's been carrying heavy timber around all of his life. 30 years with his dad, from a little wee boy to a grown man. He's a carpenter, strong as an ox. But not on that day. Not on that day. He'd been punched and beaten half the night by those religious leaders. In the early hours of the morning, Pilate had him flogged. I tell you, 39 lashes, they say. I tell you why? Because 40 lashes is enough to kill you. But scourging that they did to Jesus, that's much worse. That's a whip that's got fragments of metal embedded in it. That rips through flesh and muscle. You know, Jesus is in a bad state. You know, Pilate hoped that this flogging, being as bad as it was, might satisfy those Jews. You know, the ones that were calling for his crucifixion. Pilate hoped Jesus might just live. He didn't really want him to die. He's going to be near death. And he might, maybe if his whipped and scourged really badly, maybe they'll just let him go and he'll live just. On that morning, when he arrived at the soldier's place down by the gate, Gennath, the soldiers had continued, they'd beaten him. They'd rammed this crown of thorns on his head. You know what it's like when somebody cuts the head? They'd rammed this crown of thorns on his head. Well, and Simon walked through that gate. Jesus hardly looked even human. What was it Isaiah said? There were many who were appalled at him. His appearance was so disfigured, beyond that of any man, and his form marred beyond human likeness. There's no way that Jesus could carry that cross up that hill. He was nearly dead already. Crucifixion, normally, they can hang on those crosses for days. If the Romans want to hurry things up, they'll break the legs. But Jesus, he died really quickly. It shocked Pilate. He thought it was a ruse by Joseph of Arimathea to try and save Jesus in some way. But no, when Pilate summoned the centurion, the soldier confirmed it. Jesus didn't last long. And the state that Jesus was in that morning when Simon saw him, it was a big problem for the soldiers. They had their orders. Crucify him. And that's what they had to do. They had to crucify him. But as they came out of their quarters and they took one look at Jesus, they knew they had a big problem. There was no sympathy on their part. No, no, no. When they got to that crucifixion site, they were happy enough to take a hammer and nail through his hands and through his feet and secure him to that cross. They were happy to haul him up on that timber and leave him to hang there naked in the full Mediterranean midday heat. They've got no problem with that. And they were happy to guard him until he could no longer support his own body weight and finally suffocated. No, there was no sympathy there. It was purely practical, the decision. The normal practice, yeah, was to carry your own cross. But Jesus couldn't. Maybe it was the damage to his muscles from this scourging. Maybe it's the beating that just weakened him. If he couldn't carry it, I don't know, because he was too weak. Or what happens if he's on the way and then we force him to and he dies under the strain? Our orders are to crucify him. It's no use if he's dead before he gets there. Blow normal practice. We need someone to carry the cross. And as I say, as he came out of the quarters and he turned left to go out through the Gennath gate, straight up the mountain, there was Simon and Cyrene just coming in through the gate. Simon will tell you what he witnessed that day. Simon will tell you the state that Jesus was in that morning. But what Simon saw on that walk of Calvary changed him forever. Despite the pain Jesus was in, despite the suffering Jesus was going through, the outstanding character of the man Jesus was so clear to see. Where was the bitterness? Where was the despair, the unjustness of it all? Where was the anger? Where were all the recriminations that you might normally expect for someone in his circumstances? What did the prophet Isaiah say? He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter. And as a sheep before his shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. That's what the prophet said. Yeah, Jesus did speak, but not against all this oppression and this affliction. All the words that Simon heard were words of sympathy, words of love, words of grace. Simon saw the ruined Jesus struggling up that hill ahead of him. He saw him there. And what he did was, he saw the women weeping by the way. Don't weep for me, Jesus said. Weep for yourselves and for your children. Simon, he saw and he heard the sneering and the mocking of the chief priests and the passers-by. He heard the insults and he heard the jeers. He heard them mocking him, saying, he saved others, but he can't save himself. And he heard Jesus' response. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Simon, he saw and heard those two thieves. He saw and heard them both mocking him from either side. Saw them both doing it. But when one of them relented, immediately he sees Jesus' grace and forgiveness poured out
even as his own lifeblood was pouring out. Today, you'll be with me in paradise. You know what? Simon saw the sky turn unnaturally black as Jesus faced his last hours. Simon felt the earth shake and break apart. He heard the very stones cry out as the Saviour of the world died alone and unrecognized. Simon saw the dead walk the streets of Jerusalem, and by some miraculous power, the tombs are broken open in the earthquake and they're raised to life again. I tell you, those words were just read that the centurion uttered. They could easily have been Simon's words. Surely, this man was the Son of God. Go and ask him. Go and speak to Simon of Cyrene. He'll tell you what he witnessed that day. Jesus gave that call. It became so meaningful to Simon. If you would be my disciple, take up your cross and follow me. What a testimony he has. And what amazing grace shown by the Father, shown by the Creator himself. Jesus is God, but he's also fully human. He wept when Lazarus died. When he fasted, he got hungry. In his time of need in the wilderness, you know, when Satan tried to take advantage of Jesus, tried to take advantage of his weakness. Remember Matthew and Mark, both of us told us, the angels came and they ministered to him when he was in need. That's what happened with Jesus. And in Gethsemane's garden, when Jesus was praying, getting ready for this awful day. Don't you remember what Matthew said to us? Jesus prayed so earnestly, his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. He was in anguish. He pleaded with the Father, if there's any other way, take this bitter cup away. But there was no other way. And so, Matthew said, God sent an angel from heaven to strengthen him. At Calvary's mountain, no angels attended. But by the grace of God, a mere man, a nominal Jew, carried the cross for Jesus. The Creator of the world, in his hour of need, allowed one of his creatures to help him. And I encourage you, take up your cross, follow him, and like Simon of Cyrene, see the love and the grace of God at work. Amen.